Well, you found it. Congratulations to you. This is the one, the only, the Daily Gopher Football Podcast. I am Jeff Rick. As always, he is JD Mill. Welcome, Gopher fans. Welcome, maybe New Hampshire fans. Welcome into the podcast. JD, we've made it through 1 week of football. On to week two.
Would that be the furthest away, potentially, that anybody had ever listened to the podcast,
New Hampshire? If anybody's listened outside of the Twin Cities, I'd be surprised. I think that would probably be the farthest. But yes, if there was anyone from New Hampshire, I gotta think that's a ways away.
That's a good point.
Unless your cousin's listening from Alaska or something.
I don't even think he's near electricity.
Probably not. He's probably not. And he probably likes it that way.
He loves it that way.
He's that kind of guy that does. Yep. Off the top, I'm just going to tell you, I feel like I've been lied to a little bit.
Did I lie?
No, I feel like, you know, the television commercials and stuff I've seen lie, because they say that what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, except that, you know, what happened with the Gophers, it didn't stay there. We've been talking about it and hearing about it all week. I mean, it came out.
Well, not only that, but I don't know if you noticed, but it was actually live on television.
Yeah, so they might want to rethink that slogan.
Yeah.
Some good things there that we're glad to bring back. So a few other things that maybe we would like to stay in Vegas. Let's start with the sky is falling portion of our program, where the world is coming to an end and everything's the worst. Marquise Gray, worst quarterback in the history of the universe. In all seriousness, how concerned are you about him as a quarterback for your 2012 Minnesota Gophers?
On a scale of 1 to 10, I think my level of concern right now is maybe a 3. You know, I guess I'd be disappointed if that Marquise was jacked up that much and apparently took him that long to settle down. So I think if my level of concern is at a 3, it's based mostly on that. If it took him that long to settle down, hopefully, obviously he can settle down a lot quicker in the upcoming games. You know, obviously he got better as the year went on last year. He got better as the game went on last week. So, you know, hopefully that trend continues. Outside of that, you know, he did put up good numbers. He did make some plays with his feet, kept the pocket moving when he needed to, and hit the passes that we needed to win. So at the end of the day, not his best performance, but it got the job done. He put up good numbers, and I think we'll see better things from him this week against New Hampshire.
Yeah, I'm hopeful. I mean, it's in some ways, I think, disappointing that they had worked all summer and we had heard how much better his accuracy had gotten, and then he'd come out and was airmailing a lot, and as you said, was kind of jumpy, missed some open guys. At the same time, he's never going to be, you know, your classic pocket passer. I mean, it's you know, that's part of the trade-off with him. He needs to hit those open guys. He needs to be a little better, and I think he will be. But he's one of the best runners in the Big Ten, period, at any position. I mean, he's a 1,000-yard rusher, a quarterback, and he's a guy who gives another angle to your offense and is one of the few real trustworthy playmakers that we have right now. I know reading just something with him and something with Lime Grover this week, you know, they said that UNLV for a lot of that game was using a spy on him to try and stop his running. And I mean, if you put Max Shortell or somewhere else in there, you don't get that. Having the spy in there means you're really going 11 on 10 if you're going to run the ball or try and throw it, because that's a linebacker who's not back in coverage or not blitzing or not doing something else to be able to help out. So, I mean, that's a big advantage. That's going to open more holes for your tailbacks, who we're hoping are better, and give your receivers more options. And clearly the receivers were open. It's just getting them the ball. So I think that's part of the trade-off with Q, and I'm fine with it. I hope he's better, but I don't think he's ever going to be like a Russell Wilson or, you know, one of those guys who's like a 65 or 70% passer. If he can even get close to 60% for the season, I think with the things he can do with his legs, I would gladly take that from him this year.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that immediately after the game last week, I had some concerns that, you know, I went through the emotions that I think every Gopher fan did, but one of the things,
were you going through a glass case of emotions?
Oh, several glass cases of emotions and a case of beer, I think. But no, I mean, it was like, I was thinking about it after the game, and I was like, I was getting nervous. I was making myself nervous because I was thinking, what if Marquise is only a really good athlete, and he's not really a very good quarterback. And what if all he can do is run and make some plays, but he's always going to be inaccurate? We're always going to have to worry about him overthrowing wide open receivers. And you know, I started to settle down after that. I do think that he's a little bit better when he has to use his athletic ability. You know, it seems like if he's on the run a little bit, when he has to create, when he's maybe when he's getting pressured is when he does his most spectacular things. If we can get Marquise to a point by, you know, a third of the way through the season, halfway through the season, where he's even got a modicum of being able to be a serviceable pocket passer, like you said, a 60%, maybe a, you know, 63-65%, I think that this offense can go a long way, because we saw that there's a lot more weapons at wide receiver than we thought that there were going to be. There's a lot more sure hands at that position than we thought. And the running game, I think, is going to be able to hold its own, including what Marquise can do with his feet. So if he can become that pocket passer who can sit back there, have a little patience, find that wide open guy, and hit that guy in stride, we're going to be in business.
Yeah, and it's people getting a little up in arms about things, and he didn't look great. But, I mean, he also last year, you know, I won't say shredded, but, I mean, he threw for over 300 yards or almost 300 yards against a very good Michigan State defense on the road, looked good in that game, made some big throws. I mean, he made some big throws in overtime when he had to do it. So it's there. It's just it's kind of a rough way to start the season, because now that's all we have to focus on right now is just that one opportunity. But, I mean, hopefully against New Hampshire this week, he's going to have an opportunity to build some confidence, you know, the next couple weeks really leading up into the Iowa game, and then, you know, have that opportunity to build on and get some more rapport with his guys. There's a lot of new receivers out there, and just get a chance to start clicking a little more, and I think he'll be fine. Some of the other concerns, penalties, again, there were a lot of them, especially false starts and stuff of the offensive line. I know the line said they weren't happy about it. It's one thing to recognize it. It's another thing to change it. Hopefully that gets better with what is still, besides Eddie Olson, really a very, very young group on that line. And punting was atrocious. Again, I got to say, of everything this weekend, that's still probably my biggest worry, just because it's something that should be automatic. Punting's one of those things you never really pay attention to. You just assume it's going to be fine until it sucks. And it's been bad for the Gophers for the last couple of years. And it's as bad as it ever was on the first game. It's just a team where, you know, if you're going to play ball control, you want to run the ball a lot. You want to set your defense up well. If you can't consistently kick the ball 40 yards, you're putting yourself in some tougher situations than you need to be. I mean, it's amazing just that small facet of the game, but how big a deal it can be when it's not good.
Yeah. And it puts so much pressure, as you mentioned, on your defense, really puts their backs against the wall. And, you know, with a inexperienced quarterback like Sherry for UNLV, you know, our defense was able to hold their own and keep UNLV from getting yards and ultimately getting points. But, you know, when we start to face some better offenses, you know, we've got in a couple weeks coming up, Western Michigan's got a dang good passing attack. Obviously, when we get into the Big Ten season, we're going to be facing much better quarterbacks and much more creative offensive coordinators. It's going to be a much bigger worry if our punting game is putting us in that type of a position and our defense is constantly having to bail us out.
Syracuse worries the heck out of me. We got a couple of weeks, but boy, they look solid against Northwestern. I know even the Northwestern blogs were saying their defense isn't great, but I mean, they put up 470 through the air and almost 600 yards of total offense and almost a comeback win. That one's looking a little tougher than maybe I had thought when the season started, but we'll get to that one in a couple of weeks, I suppose. A couple of the good things here, we'll wrap up talking about the game from last week and move on to other things, but Danelle Kirkwood actually looked like a real Big Ten running back. I didn't know if he had that in him or not. Looks like he does. Seeing more of that would be a good thing, because we've seen flashes from him. The pass rush was there. I know that, you know, they had two sacks. They were knocking them down. I know the headlines in the Vegas papers Well, probably not headlines, probably like way buried on like page five down at the bottom where they cover UNLV football is where the story was. But just talking about how much pressure, how battered he was, how much he was getting knocked down. I mean, that's a great sign because it's something we haven't seen probably since, you know, Van de Stieg was lining up at the end and rushing quarterbacks. It's been a few years before we've had, you know, defensive line in a group that can get after the quarterback a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the things that we can really look at as positives is the line on both sides of the ball played pretty well. Marquise was relatively well protected. The line was opening up some good lanes for the running backs. And as you mentioned on the defensive side of the ball, you know, good pass rush. The one thing that I was concerned about is I felt like UNLV was getting way too many yards running up the middle. It seems like they were able to just kind of gash us and get a good 6, 7, 8 yards almost any time that they wanted to. I think we did adjust to it later in the game, but that's not something that we need to be worried about going into the Big Ten season when we're going to be facing much larger lines. But overall, I thought in the trenches, the Gophers looked a lot better than they have over the last couple of years, which is certainly something that the team really got away from during the Brewster years.
If his knee holds up, Brennan Beal starts by week what? 4, 5, 6?
Yeah, I think Rallis is a good linebacker, and he's obviously a team leader and really a strong voice on that defensive side of the ball. But I think that we saw that he's probably not cut out for the middle linebacker position. And I really did. I think this is what you were getting at. I really thought Beal outplayed him in just, you know, obviously not quite as many snaps as he got. We got to see a lot more players, some of the, you know, the guys further down on the depth chart get a lot more plays because of the heat. But I think that, yeah, I agree with you. Once things shake out, provided he can stay healthy, I got to think Beal is going to be the starter at middle linebacker within a couple of games. And we're going to see Rallis get moved back to the outside because I don't think that they're going to leave a guy like that with that type of experience on the bench.
No special guests on the podcast this week. If you want your New Hampshire football information, JD did a great interview with Alan Lessels of the New Hampshire Union Leader. A real deal gets paid for his work. Writer, newspaper writer, sports guy for the New Hampshire Union Leader. So he does breaks it down, what you can expect from UNH football on Saturday. Been a 1AA powerhouse or FCS powerhouse or whatever politically correct term we're calling the subdivision. At this point, but it's something to learn. I'm a little nervous for this one, probably because we've struggled so much with 1AA schools in the past. Oh, feels like ever, but they're not a bad team there, the Wildcats.
Well, not only that, but they've got a history of knocking off Division I programs, as Alan mentioned in the interview. They went on a streak where 04, 06, 07, 08, 09, 2010, and 2011. They beat,
yeah, they've had one
Division I school. So that was
not like not all bottom, but Rutgers, Northwestern, Marshall, Army, Ball State, Pittsburgh, and Toledo. So yeah. Some of those are like, yeah, but the others are like, that's kind of interesting. I mean, there's a couple decent BCS schools in there.
Yeah, I think probably if you would look at the Gophers from 2004 through 2011, you know, you might actually put them kind of in the same company as a lot of those schools. So yeah, I mean, I'm still confident that we'll win this game and hopeful that we'll win it handily. But yeah, New Hampshire seems to be the type of program that has got a bit of giant killer to them.
We'll get to New Hampshire preview and stuff in a minute. Let's be honest, there's nobody from the Wildcats listening to this that cares. So,
nobody
popping up on the blog today was talk about scheduling and how How do you pronounce our new writer, by the way? Love him. Doing a great job. Glad to have him aboard. I don't know how to pronounce his handle. I understand what he did. Is it Golfer? Is it just Gopher? Like, I understand what he's doing there. It works well in print, but I don't know how to pronounce it.
Well, for the uninitiated, I don't, did he explain this?
Yes.
At all, the AU is the...
He explained it to us. I don't know if he's actually explained it to the readers.
The AU is the scientific symbol on the periodic table of elements for gold. So the idea was gold is in gopher, so gold in gopher. But I don't know how you pronounce it.
Maybe we'll just say golden gopher is how he's... We'll get him to clarify on that.
Yeah. Well, it's maybe it's like Prince. Maybe his, you know, for a while he was just a symbol.
Is that his Christian name or his given name, or do you think it's...
I know nothing about...
All right. Well, he's going to have to answer that. Anyway, long story short, he did the nugs today, and I kind of wish he'd do the nugs every day because he does a good job at it, and I'm terrible when I do them. Like, you'll see the one for Friday that's awful that I did. But in there, we get into one of his links, and it talks about scheduling. Long story short of it, go ahead and read it there in the blog if you would. But just talks about how Jerry Kill is fine with the current scheduling the way it is, where we don't have USC's in the scheduler, Cal. Texas was supposed to be on there and fell off. It's games that were at least, unless the bottom falls out here in the next two or three, that I think we're going to be favored in most of them in, that we're going to have a pretty good chance. It's basically, we've gone back to the Glenn Mason School of Scheduling, and Jerry Kill said at this stage in the program, he's fine with it. A bit of a debate. For me, it just looks like this. I think you're at you put yourself in a difficult position just by being the program that you are. I agree with the people who say it's going to hurt your non-conference game attendance, for September, because, I'm interested to see how many people show up to see New Hampshire on Saturday or Western Michigan the day after, or the week after, Syracuse after that. But when you schedule the Syracuses or the Cals, but the USC or Cal or some of the bigger schools, you're also risking a blowout, which nobody wants to come see either, or putting more of their fans in the stands than yours. Where do you fall in this argument, JD?
You know, in the interest of full disclosure, I got to tell you that when Tim Brewster came in, I was of the opinion that he was right, that we should be scheduling tougher opponents in the non-conference schedule. Now, that was based on the fact that I thought at the time that Tim Brewster was coming in here to take what Glenn Mason had built to the next level. Now, Glenn Mason was on Barrero tonight, and he was talking about how his philosophy in scheduling non-conference opponents and blah, 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 blah. We essentially know it. What Jerry Kill clarified today was that he likes the non-conference schedule to be, for lack of a better word, easy, because we're in the process of building a program. You have to, when you're in that process of building a program, you need to teach your program to compete. You need to teach your program to win. You need to teach your program to get to bowl games. Once you get to that point, I think that's when you start to look at adding some more difficult teams to your schedule. The difference between Jerry Kill and Glenn Mason, yes, both of them inherited programs that were in trouble. Glenn Mason got the Gophers to 8 wins, a tie for 4th place in the Big Ten, and a bowl game in just his third year, and really never wanted to, even when he got the Gophers to that point of quote-unquote respectability, never pushed the envelope as far as scheduling tougher non-conference opponents. My opinion is because Glenn Mason never felt like the University of Minnesota could be anything more than what he brought them to. And so he would rather get those 4 non-conference wins, get his 2 or 3 wins in the Big Ten every season, go to a bowl game, and let the chips fall where they may. Jerry Kill, at this point, we don't know. Obviously, it's only year 2 of the Kill era. But, if he wants to schedule 4 cream puffs early in the season to get the team built up, to learn how to win, to learn how to compete. I totally understand it. My hope is that if he's able to build this program to where we think that it has the ability to be, and you and I have said for years, the Minnesota Gopher football program is not going to be Michigan. It's not going to be Ohio State. It's not going to be one of those top tier teams in the nation, but we should be able to be an 8, 9, 10 win team on a year in, year out basis, compete for a division title, compete for maybe a conference title every 4 or 5 years, get to Pasadena and what have you. I would hope that if we begin to get to that level, Jerry Kill would look at adding tougher non-conference opponents.
I think he will. I mean, he's scheduled a little more aggressively at Northern Illinois. Part of that, though, is because you're a MAC school and you got to beef up your non-conference schedule if you want to start sniffing anything for any bigger bowls. I think a lot of this comes back to attendance. There's been a lot of talk about the student section. I think that's where it's originated, because there was another ridiculous article in the Strib about the lack of participation in the student section in tickets without a lot of context, which is what Gold in Gopher, or however we pronounce it, has been his rallying cry. And I agree with it. The student section one isn't one that I think is easily solvable, and there's a number of issues there. But the bottom line, it's about, as Charlie Sheen would say, winning kind of solves a lot of your things. The student section is packed. The stadium is packed at some other schools, like our hated rivals in Iowa, like Wisconsin, because they win. I mean, Wisconsin plays a cupcake schedule every September in their non-conference, but they still pack the house. Why? Because they're a winning team. We're a long way from getting to that point. But even for Iowa, if they're going to have, a 6-6 season this year, or 7 wins or 8 wins or whatever, they're going to pack it in because they've proven year in and year out, you're hitching up to a winner and going to see that. And the Gophers just haven't sustained it. I think even in Mason's time, people got a little, or not a little, they got apathetic after a while with going 7 or 8 wins is great, but when you're still sub 500 in the Big Ten and going to the Insight Bowl or the Music City Gopher Bowl, as they ended up pretty much renaming it, you want to see them take that next step, kind of like what Michigan State has done, like what Northwestern does every once in a while, like what Iowa does every couple of years, where you're going to have a chance to go to a New Year's Day Bowl and matter. And that's that you want to solve your attendance problems. That's the next step. And I'm sure that's what Jerry Kill will tell you, is, we could schedule 4 BCS teams in the non-conference. We could schedule, like they're doing this year and for the next couple, where it's a down year. What's going to bring people in for this football program, and what's going to help overall with the attendance and everything else, is just going to be the Gophers winning.
Yeah, I agree. And listen, my opinion is it's a wash. If you're going to tell me that the Gophers are going to play New Hampshire and Western and a MAC team and somebody like Syracuse every single year, and they're going to get at home and get 3 wins out of it, or the Gophers are going to bring in USC and that's going to bring better attendance, I don't buy it. You and I were at the USC game 2 years ago. That was not a packed house. It was nowhere near a packed house. The student section was maybe 3/4 full. And that was only the second year of TCF Bank Stadium. So I don't necessarily buy the argument that if you scheduled tougher non-conference opponents, you're going to be helping your attendance. In my opinion, I think it's a wash. If people are going to come to the game, they're going to come to the game.
Yeah, it's just, there's got to be some sort of sustained. It's a team that hasn't been to a New Year's Day Bowl since the 60s. I mean, it's pretty much that simple. It's been that long of a drought for them, and that long before they've really been relevant. They're playing in arguably one of the toughest divisions, certainly in college football. And it's going to be up against it, but that's what you're facing if you want to get it. And I think Jerry Kill gets that. I also liked, by the way, and I don't think a big enough deal was made of this, but if you saw, I think it was in his press conference, they asked him what he talked about when he talked to the freshmen. Basically was in a roundabout way saying to have a good time, drink it up, get boozed, come and have fun, which I love. I'm like
hammered.
Yeah.
It's get like hammered.
That, It's like your college kids, the people that are staunchly against all that stuff. It's like, it's college. That's what kids do. Like, that's what you do when you're 18 to 22. It's what a lot of people do when they're 25. But I mean, that's part of the deal, is that a lot of kids are getting soused and coming, and it's a place to be. I think honestly, for the student section thing, and some people have mocked it saying, oh, well, you know, they should just go and support their school. It's like, there's gotta be a reason to go. I mean, I went, and gosh, I hate to use Wisconsin as a good example of anything, but my wife's parents are from Wisconsin and Badger fans and blah blah blah. So went to the game with them, I think against like Peabody State, somebody terrible. They beat them like 70-3 in Madison, but the student section was full from beginning to end. And yeah, Madison's had a good team, and yeah, they built it, but I mean, that student section is participating, doing something different like the entire game. I mean, there's chants, there's this, there's the wave, there's the, you know, the third quarter jump around, there's always something going on. It's like, it's the it place to be if you're a student, because you're engaged. It's not just about what's going on at the field. And I feel like, in, you know, like if you've been to a Gopher hockey game, there's a lot going on. They're chanting, they're pointing at the goalie, calling him a sieve, they're doing a lot of cool stuff. It's participatory. The football, it's just like the same two or three songs from the marching band, and we say, you know, the first, and it's another Golden Gopher first down, and that's all they do. It's not like there's much more to do than besides watch the game and see what happens. And I that's on the student section, I think, and student leaders to find more and start traditions of their own. But I suppose at the same time, that doesn't happen unless you're winning too.
No, I agree with you. I don't think there's a magic formula. I think it's winning. And I think it's atmosphere.
Winning.
If you're winning, people are going to come to the game. Students, non-students, everybody's going to come. But you have to have a damn good atmosphere to be able to carry yourself through those games where you're getting blown out, or a season where things aren't really going your way. That's what Wisconsin and that's what Iowa have built for themselves. They've built a situation where even when they're in a down year on the field, everybody knows that you're going to go to the football game and you're going to have, as Pitbull would say, a real good time.
A real good time. Yeah, it's there's a number of things happening here. I think everybody's got points on it, and let's hope it improves. I like that our coach, though, is definitely steering the students, shall we say, in the right direction towards improving the atmosphere in the student section at TCF Bank Stadium. Winning helps as well. We should mention Derek Wells, by the way. I keep forgetting that. I know it's been Derek Wells' week on there. He had a hell of a game. I'm not expecting him to get that many picks and do that every game, but he was nice. Looking for more of that this year. What are your expectations for Saturday? Again, I'm nervous when we play anybody, but especially I think a school like New Hampshire, because it's like, we should beat 1AA schools. There's no reason to lose to them. But at the same time, I think because that pressure's there, because you know that you're supposed to beat them, it almost makes it worse because it hasn't happened the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think one of the things, you know, I feel like I say this every time we play a school like this, but we should be bigger and we should be faster than New Hampshire. And, you know, the good news is we can say without question, we are bigger and we are faster than we were last year. So that's a good thing. Going against a team like New Hampshire, if our defensive line and our offensive line for that matter can dominate, we should be able to take care of them pretty handily. And, you know, I haven't looked at the numbers or the size of the linemen or anything like that, but, you know, certainly I would think if Hageman and Wilhite can get the kind of push on passing downs as they got against UNLV, certainly they should be able to get that kind of push against a school that's bound to have smaller linemen. And hopefully the offensive line can continue what they started last week against, again, probably a smaller defense.
Yeah, it's a game where they're hopefully going to have a chance if they play well to build some confidence, to get a win, to do some downhill running. I mean, it's an offense that really everywhere else Jerry Kill has been, it's been geared to run the football. It's been an offense that's ran the ball probably 60% of the time. And because probably just a lack of talent, you know, at running back, or a lack of playmakers, you know, the offensive line not gelling. We didn't see that last year, but maybe it's getting better with Kirkwood in that this year. You also have a talent like Marquise Gray running the ball. You're probably going to want him to do that. It's an opportunity where they should be better. And yeah, we've said this year, we've said it last year, we've said it for most of the Brewster era as well. these are games where you shouldn't have to worry about it. You should show up, get to cheer, have fun, be out by the third quarter because they're up by, you know, 4 or 5 touchdowns. And yet I still don't think it's probably going to be that way. This one's probably going to be closer than we'd like it to be.
Well, the Allen from the Union Leader, like you said, a real live, gets paid to write journalist, said he thinks that New Hampshire will find a way to keep it close. But then he also predicted a 31-17 final score. So,
which is relatively close if you're talking, you know, an FCS school against a Big Ten school. That is relatively close, but it's...
I suppose you're right.
I got to say, right. He might have more confidence in the Gophers than we do, or at least than I do at this point, but I hope he's right.
Well, you know, partially I think we're setting ourselves up to hopefully be surprised. I mean, obviously... We could want nothing more this weekend than to see the Gophers absolutely blow New Hampshire out of the stadium. But yeah, I mean, I tend to think just because of the way things have been the last couple of years and the way things that were just last weekend that, you know, maybe the Gophers start a little bit slow. Again, I hope that the fact that we should be bigger and more athletic and stronger is going to help us in the end. And maybe we pull away in that second half. But I actually tend to think that a 31-17 score is probably fairly realistic.
I know you're wondering. They have 3 offensive linemen that tip the scales at 300 pounds. They have 2 defensive tackles that are each 311 pounds. How is that possible? How are those guys playing 1AA football? That's huge. That's bigger than our defensive tackles.
It's true. Bigger. But I cannot believe. I mean, obviously, they can't be as athletic or as fast, maybe as our linemen. Or you'd have to think that they'd be playing at the upper level.
Yeah, but they certainly don't look like they got a bunch of 265-pound offensive linemen. So it'll be interesting. It's going to be a test. I do like to see as well the coaches talking about, the players talking about that they're not going to take this game lightly. You got to think everybody learned from last year with the North Dakota State game, with the New Mexico State game. Especially at this point in the program, you don't overlook everybody. You take everybody seriously. You play everybody like it's a big game, because it is, because you're at this point, you're guaranteed nothing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, at this point, if the Gophers were playing the University of St. Thomas, I would think that we would find things to be nervous about.
But that's a quality Division III football program.
Absolutely. Right there. But, you know, like I mentioned on the blog this week, and we hear about it all the time, you know, from week 1 to week 2 is usually where you're going to see the biggest jump in improvement for a football team. And I think that's the best thing that happened with the UNLV game, outside of the fact that we won the game, is the fact that the coaches do now have real actual footage, real actual game tape to be able to look at and make adjustments where they need to. You know, previous to this, they only had, you know, maybe some scrimmages, some drills in camp and things like that. Going against other guys on the team, you never really know exactly what you have. They've actually got something tangible to look at now, and I would expect to see a big improvement, and I hope that that really is a thing that can maybe push us to a blowout win.
Yeah, a couple of things here to wrap up. Definitely looking to see how the running game does, if we're going to see a lot more downhill between the runs, basically to see how our tailbacks, if they're going to continue doing that. I know it's a 1AA school, but they've got 311-pound tackles, so that's got to count for something. Wide receiver as well. We lost Jamel Harbison for the season with an ACL injury. Exciting young freshman, barely got a chance to play before he got hurt. At least he'll get the season of red shirts and he'll come back and get a do-over in his freshman season. But interesting to see if we get any more clarity on the receiver position. Is like, what, 8 guys or 9 guys last week caught passes. Everybody kind of got involved. Andre McDonald was targeted a lot, didn't end up catching many. Most of those weren't his fault, overthrown. But there's a lot of options at receiver, and I'm interested to see who steps up there. And then just defensively, how we handle their offense. I mean, if this would be a great time to make a statement, to get that pass rush again like we saw against UNLV and really pressure them and to stop it. So it looks like they're going to try and run the ball from the numbers against Holy Cross. They piled up almost 300 yards on the ground. So to really shut them down and disrupt them up the middle and get the run game shut down, I think would be big things.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't matter who the Gophers are playing this week. You know, whether it's a BCS program or, as it is, New Hampshire, or even if it was the University of St. Thomas. The name of the game is they need to be able to figure out a way to do the fundamentals the right way. You know, you got to be able to stop the run up the middle. You got to be able to complete passes to guys that are wide open. You got to be able to punt the ball. They need to see improvement in those basics of the game areas this week before they can begin to really, you know, open up the playbook and start doing more stunts and things like that. They've got to just get those basics down, stop making the dumb penalties and things like that. And that will hopefully, even against a team like New Hampshire, that gives us something to build on.
Absolutely. 11 a.m. kickoff on Saturday. Get to the bank if you can. Plenty of good seats available. But otherwise, it'll actually be on a channel you can get. It'll be on the Big Ten Network at an 11 a.m. kick. I like Allen's prediction. I think 31-17 sounds about right. I think the Gophers end up winning by maybe a couple of touchdowns, but it's going to be far closer than we want for far too long.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I hope we're very wrong. I would love to see this be, 21. I mean, I would love to see it be a 2-touchdown game at halftime and just have the second half be us just chipping away at the with the run game, just really beating them with our horses. But we'll see what happens.
Yep. So that's what we got for that. Again, for New Hampshire news, check out JD's interview with Alan Lessels, the New Hampshire Union leader. That's right there on the front page. You'll get up to speed on New Hampshire football and what we can expect from them. And Friday, we've got a special announcement. We got a new logo coming out for those who will be seeing it there. I kind of like it. SB Nation's getting a bit of a facelift, doing some overhaul on a few things, trying to look a little more uniform across the platforms. But interested to see what people think of it. That'll be out on Friday at some point.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it and looking forward to seeing people's reactions as well.
Definitely. So stay tuned to the blog. We'll get you set for the game. Again, it's an 11 a.m. kickoff, as are most of them in games this season. Gophers New Hampshire from TCF Bank. Get there. Otherwise, it'll be on the Big Ten Network. That'll do it for us. Until next week, for JD, I am Jeff Rick. Stay classy and go Gophers.
Sky you mock. You stick around. You figure it out.